CLNS Media, powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/roll. Use our promo code CLNS50 for 50% off your first deposit.
And welcome to the Celtics post-game show on CLNS Media. I'm Bobby Manning. Good intro right there and a great way to start our Sunday with a 3:30 tip-off early post-game show. I'm Bobby Manning back with Taylor McLeod like you heard us last week, and the Celtics won this one pretty much by the second quarter. Taylor showed up here just a little before halftime. We're doing this together here in Syracuse, New York, and the Celtics were pretty much done with this one by the time he got here. They were pushing 40, got into 50 in the second half, and they win this one 118-72. Again, blowing out an opponent. This one stunk, so it's tough to see what we're going to react to really here because of the fact that Kevin Love didn't play, Tristan Thompson, Darius Garland, their first-round pick, all those guys were out. But independent of that, and we're going to bring the Magic game into it a little bit too here, Is this rising your expectations for this team? They look great. Offensively, they are so well equipped. They're able to get out on the move. They're able to get into their half-court offense, moving the ball around the floor quickly. Those are the takeaways that really stick out to me. But I'm going to punt to Taylor McLeod here, who's looking back on two games this week since we last talked. Taylor, welcome aboard. Where do you want to start with this one?
I think you made a good point, Bob, when you said it's kind of tough to take anything from a game like this with such a big win done so early in the game. There's not a ton that you can really sift through to take anything concrete. But that second half that we just watched was huge in terms of bench play, and especially for the real young guys. Obviously, we've had some news with, you know, Taco Fall, Max Strus, Tremont Waters, everyone, those last couple roster spots we've had, you know, a little bit of shakeup recently, and it was good to see all those guys get out there. And, you know, Taco Fall became a two-way player today. Max Strus got the last roster spot. Strus was hitting threes. Taco Fall was playing well. Tremont Waters was tremendous in that fourth quarter we just saw. So stuff like that is more what I'm looking for in a game like this. Not so much what did the top-end players do, but what did the bottom guys do with their opportunities?
Well, let's start with this one. The center conversation's the hot topic. That's the story of this preseason, is how those four guys are going to fall into line there. And we've seen what we talked about last week fall into place. Daniel Theis came back and was phenomenal starting in place of Robert Williams in that game against the Magic, rolling to the rim, being that fifth floor spacer out there with the starters, and really all around being the most versatile defender of those centers that they have. Williams is the great rim protector. Kanter is a little bit of nothing out there on the defensive side like we got into last week. But Theis can defend on the perimeter, take himself inside. He's not the strongest guy in the world. His feet are quick enough. He can slide across the floor and keep everything in front of him. Great rebounder. Finished 4 or 5 in this one, plus 15. He was great. I loved his game again, and that's a guy who can shoot threes on top of it. So I think he's solidifying himself as the starting center here. But let's talk about Robert Williams, because this game was all about him to me. You drew the line right there. Not a lot that we can take from the starters in this one. The lower depth guys, I'm not as in love with. I just don't think they're going to play that big of a role on this team. But Robert Williams is a guy who I came into this season saying, is he going to be in the rotation? Is he not? I really didn't know how to feel either way. Watching the last two games, and especially his debut where he came out and started with everybody, he is just so much more comfortable. That's what you were saying in the third quarter. He looks comfortable playing the game of basketball now out there at this speed.
Absolutely. We've always seen that Robert Williams is a great athlete. From the time he was at A&M and last year, we've seen the blocks, we've seen the dunks. But to see him really running that pick and roll with Tremont Waters and getting those easy dunks in it's just a comfortability that you can see on the floor, the way he's moving around, the way he's getting rebounds, getting into a guard, and getting out in transition. The blocks are to be expected. He's a freak athlete. He's going to come from the weak side and just send shots, and that's what he does. Would I have liked to see him – or, you know, yeah, like, I'd love for Robert Williams to be the starter on this team. Time Lord as a starter. That'd be a great story. Great for Celtics Twitter. Great for material. And I think great for the team. Am I upset that Tice is starting? No. It's his third year. He's a veteran center. He's the most comfortable. He's probably the best player at this point. But I do like what we're seeing from Robert Williams the first three games, and especially tonight.
4 or 5 in his own right, 8 points. A few great blocks. One got taken back on a goaltend that clearly was a goaltend as he chased the guy down from half court. But plus 19 in this one. His minutes counted as well. And once he got out there with the lower bench guys in the second half, he was taking over. That play where Carson Edwards was getting pushed back down. I don't know who was backing him down on the Cavaliers because, honestly, I didn't know a lot of the Cavaliers out here in this one. And then he just came in that weak side and sent the shot into the crowd. Two of the great blocks that he had today. But the play that stuck out to me was early in that first half when he just cut a pass off at the three-point line. Because normally this is a guy I look at. He's like playing zone almost, sitting around the paint area. But he was able to read a pass on his man that he was switched out to on in the perimeter, bat it down, get it, you know, a few dribbles in transition over to Brown, and then get right to the rim for him to receive the lob from Brown. You know, the key to Williams putting himself ahead of Tice, which is still certainly a possibility here. I don't think Tice has run away with this spot yet, but it's going to be him showing that he can defend on the perimeter.
Yeah, and he's shown that he's a good enough athlete to do it. And those plays like you just touched on are huge in that regard. My favorite part of that play, though, is the pass over to Brown and coming back for the lob. That's where I see the game slowing down. You're seeing those passes. Things are setting up, you know, two or three steps in advance. I don't think any competition at all. I think Tice and Williams play very different games. Tice can stretch it out. He's a little bit smaller. He plays a little bit different. Robert Williams is much bigger athlete. I think he's a lot better rim protector. Who should start? That's up for debate. It's the third preseason game. Right now, I'm liking how their games are looking like they're going to complement each other.
Yeah, certainly. And there's a lot of interchangeable skills that they're going to be able to throw out there as well. You have a shooter in Tice. You have a rim protector in Williams. And Kanter, he's the guy we haven't hit on enough yet from this one. He struggled a little bit in that first half again, and they put him out there, and Tommy said something interesting. Offensively, he's still the guy who feels most out of place on this team because he's backing guys down, going into full extensive post-up sets, and Tommy said he's almost forcing a shot a little bit. He's supposed to be that bench scorer on the team right now. He almost is that sixth man on this team right now because he is the greatest scorer off the bench if we look back at all these guys' histories. Carson Edwards might grow into that role, but right now they need Kanter to be in the position where he can drop, I don't know, 8 to 10 points in short minutes off the bench while grabbing a few offensive rebounds to maybe stretch that total even further, because the minutes he's out there just haven't looked good. Again, they're going at him with the pick and roll. Marquise Bolden, who we remember here from Duke, was going at him in the pick and roll and beating them up early on. That was really the only stretch that the Cavaliers were able to get in this one besides an early 4-3 lead. So Kanter still, he came here to be that consensus starting center, and he's already lost that for good reason, because you need someone who's more skilled to balance out this rotation. Again today, that defense is tough to hide. They only ended up playing him 13 minutes. And it doesn't seem like he's going to be able to build that many minutes. And the thing is, he still clearly has this over Grant Williams. It was interesting that they didn't play those two guys together when they looked so good last Sunday together out there. Williams didn't play in the first half. But there's still something with Kanter on this roster that they haven't sorted out with him.
You hit the nail on the head, Bob. Enes Kanter is known for being the guy who can't play defense in the modern NBA. Billy Donovan said, I can't play him. That's a famous moment in the NBA. And it just hasn't changed. He struggles so much on that end, and it's so frustrating. The basketball camps across the country, the constant jabs at Kyrie, I think he was endearing himself to the Boston crowd so much this summer. He took number 11, all that stuff. People were forgetting that he can't play defense. Can he get a bucket or two here and there? Of course. Like, he's proven to be a good scorer in the NBA. like you said, and like Tommy said, he seems out of place in this offense. His biggest skill right now, his most consistent skill is rebounding. It always has been rebounding, which is huge, but I don't know where it fits on this team.
He's going to almost be a spark, and I just hope he's comfortable with it, because they're going to go small quite a bit on this team, and they have guys who can run the floor that are going to allow them to play small and can defend the rim at a high enough rate that they can have fours out there who aren't going to make a big enough impact around the rim. You know what I think the story of the preseason is so far? It's Jason Tatum's defense. He has been so good on that end of the floor. And it's not just him individually with guys coming straight at him. He's playing the top of the man-to-man defense when he's on the perimeter so well now that he's really mastered reading passes across the top there where he can get his long arms out there and throw them in the transition and even get easy points for himself in that sense. But the key right here is that early on in this game, Brown was defending a guy on the baseline. I think it was Cedi Osman. He goes to hit that tough turnaround shot that he's really, you know, built his bread and butter on in this league. And Tatum's right there in an instant to get his long arm on that and block it. Those are the two plays that keep sticking out to me with Tatum and say he's going to be an extremely important part of this defense. And if he's giving you that at the four, or whatever you want to call it out there on the wing, I'm not going to say it's going to make up for Kanter, but it's going to make it that much easier to throw a Tice, a Williams out there, have a decent amount of offense on rolls to the rim, and find the balance that this team is going to need.
Yeah, and with Jason Tatum, his first year, we were all surprised by how well he played defensively. I think last year, his defense got lost in the shuffle because of the long twos that everyone complained about all season long. What I've seen so much from him and from a couple other guys too, especially Jalen and even Gordon Hayward to an extent, is that without Al Horford and Kyrie Irving, you can tell that they're stepping up to the plate and this is their team now. They're rising to these challenges and just playing a little bit different. I think you're right with Tatum on defense. I think he's more comfortable playing the defense. He's a much smarter basketball player. And you can see that he's just, you know, becoming a bigger person. He's getting bigger. And that's obviously going to help on defense. You combine those two things, you know, increasing size and in more experience, and you're going to have a better player, a better defender. So while I don't know about how it affects Enes Kanter's ability to get on the floor, I think it's really important because in a league where so many of these wings are such gifted scorers now, you have to have that guy who can just at least limit them. And if Tatum can be that and get buckets on the other end, that's huge.
The Celtics postgame show this year, and we are back for our 10th anniversary season. Started in that 2009-2010 season. 10 years ago now was the last time the Celtics were in the NBA Finals, and this conference is looking somewhat open. And Philadelphia is going to have something to say about that as they try to reestablish themselves. The Bucks are certainly favorites in this conference. You know what's sticking out to me so far, though, Taylor, is that every single team is reeling from a loss. The Celtics right now are trying to figure out life after Al Horford, and we got an interesting Al Horford story out within the last few days that we'll probably touch on a little bit tonight. The Bucks are suffering from the loss of Malcolm Brogdon. Indiana is not going to have Victor Oladipo for some amount of time here. So 10 years after that last Celtics Finals run, if they can really hone in on who they are and who they've shown to be through these few preseason games, a fast-paced team that can kill it from three-point land and use its defense to transfer to offense, if they can do that, it'll get everybody points. I think they'll be balanced enough on both ends of the floor. And maybe, just maybe, they can push for that first NBA Finals. And we're going to be here for the whole run. Every single game this year, we're going to be 2.5 hours after post-game, after the game tips, we're going to be here with post-game, and we are brought to you by HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit, which gives you easy seasonal recipes and pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door. You've heard about a lot of these services that do this thing. Well, HelloFresh does it best. People are busy. We're out here grinding all day at college. Whether you're out doing a 9-to-5 or just working weird hours that bring you home late, you want to have that meal ready for you to make when you get home. And and HelloFresh does that by making cooking delicious with meals at home They're going to make that a reality. So for $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/CLNS80 and enter CLNS80. They're going to give you $80 off your first month of HelloFresh. They're going to completely solve your cooking issues. They got step-to-step recipes, pre-measured ingredients. Like I said, you'll have everything you need to get a wow-worthy dinner on the table in 30 minutes. That's what they're going to guarantee, 30 minutes every single night for you for 1 month. And we're going to help you get $80 off that. That is HelloFresh.com/CLNS80. All right, 347-215-7771. If you've been listening to us for years here, you know the number. And the boards are currently wide open. Big news today that Taylor mentioned, Taco Fall is going to be the two-way player along with Tremont Waters. Tremont Waters looked really good out there. That's something from the bottom of this game that I wanted to pick on, because I said this before the season started. Brad Wanamaker is like that backup point guard right now that Stevens is going to lean on for a change of pace, but I don't think he brings too much of a change to pace of the games when he enters. Yeah, not a massive change on the defensive side of the ball, just a few inches on top of Kemba Walker. This guy, Tremont Waters, was one of the more underrated guards in this draft. He was the second highest steals leader in the NCAA and was such a sensational facilitator on that LSU team. He's small, he's quick, he can turn the corner and get the ball out to shooters and help Max Strus hit 3 three-pointers late in the game. He's a two-way player. He's only got 45 days in Boston, but I think he's going to eat quite a few of those by entering the point guard rotation with Wanamaker.
Yeah, and I don't think we should forget about Carson Edwards in all of this. But the thing about Tremont Waters is obviously he's undersized, and that's the biggest thing you see when he steps out of the floor. But I haven't seen any issues with getting shots off or creating shots. He's super quick. There was one play tonight where he kind of just dipped under a defender right to the right elbow and kind of extended his arm and just flicked it up. Classic, you know, almost like the IT layup where you're kind of...
And he almost dunked, right?
Yeah, he almost threw one down too. So I think he's really fun. He plays really hard on both ends of the floor. I hope to see him a lot in Boston. That'd be cool. Whether or not that happens is up for debate, but he's obviously a talented player.
I tried to convince you during this game. We're going to have Taco Fall, Carson Edwards, maybe Javonte Green if they can convince him to stick around. Doesn't seem likely there if they're keeping Max Strus with that last spot. But they're going to have some players up there in Maine. I think we might see the biggest crowds in Maine that we've seen in all their years affiliated with the Celtics. You don't want to make the trip, Taylor, do you?
Come on. Going from the woods of Western Massachusetts on a cold December night to Portland, Maine. I don't know about that, but if Tremont Waters is down there putting up numbers, I'll go.
Hey, so there's a chance, huh? I'm really trying to get you up there and be the CLNS correspondent from Maine. Not every night, but some nights.
We'll see what happens.
I think you'll like them better in Worcester if they end up making that move.
I mean, hey, I'll do what I have to.
All right, what do you want to turn to next here? Should we do our taco midsection? We're still waiting for callers. We're going to be here about 45 minutes after the Celtics destroyed the Cleveland Cavaliers behind a great effort from Taco Fall, Daniel Tyson's side. Jaylen Brown had a great steal and score early in this one, a plus 30 for him. He continues to look outstanding. Kemba came out, hit a trio at threes, and sat down. I think I'm going to turn to Gordon Hayward next because he's clearly the X factor on this team. And he came on that first game a week ago. I think we loved how he started with the aggression, the steal, the finish in transition. He looked great in that game. But again here, not on the ball a ton. Gets three shots, hits one. It's all right, but a max player, 2 years removed from the injury, if these are the nights he's going to have, you wonder what this team's ceiling is going to be because there's not a lot of star power here outside of Kemba Walker if he's not turning it up.
I agree to an extent. I don't put a ton of weight into a game like this. I think the biggest thing with Gordon Hayward is that without Kyrie and without Al Horford, he is the most experienced player. He's supposed to be the best player on this team. he and Kemba Walker. Obviously, I predicted last week that I think Jason or Jaylen Brown is going to end up at the end of the season will be the best player on this team. Gordon Hayward with more responsibility, I think, will flourish. My favorite thing to see last year was when he would run the second unit. Because of Kemba Walker, I don't know how much the ball is going to be in his hands, but Kemba's also a good enough player and a smart enough point guard to know how to get him that ball. So I think it's a lot about letting Gordon try to play as similarly as he did in Utah without changing everything for him, because he is, like you said, the X factor, an extremely important part of this team. And he is a max contract player. He's supposed to be there in the biggest moments and be making the biggest plays. At some point, we're going to have to see it. I still believe that there's a ton left with this guy. The injury 2 years ago, like you said, I have big hopes for Gordon Hayward this season. I think it's just about, you know, capitalizing on opportunity and really going after it.
It might just be about playmaking. If they can get him on the ball quite a bit, move Walker off the ball a ton, and sort of shift the offense in that direction, that might be how you get him going. He needs to be on the ball a substantial amount. And tonight he was not enough. We're calling it this afternoon, 3 o'clock start. He needs it, and that's when I look at the starting lineup, and I didn't love that he was returned to it, because not only do you minimize the amount of potential upside scoring that you have on the bench, and not a lot of people are noticing this because they play everybody off the bench in a game like this, but look at the bench scoring chart. You get 6 from Kanter, 5 from Smart, 7 from Ogilvy. He'll probably get out there in rotation at the forward spot if you're starting all 3 of those forwards. But still, how much are we really going to see of him when the games get rolling? Robert Williams, love the thought of him entering the rotation. But are you really going to be shifting 3 centers into a game? They could be early on in the season. But once they get around to playoff time and all that, they are not going to be rotating 3 centers on a regular basis. So this thing's going to thin out, and then you're going to be leaning on 2 to 3 guys to do all the scoring that really didn't do too much here. Kanter 6, Smart 5, Ogilvy 7. If you let Hayward get that bench role where he's going to be on the ball, first one off the bench, I think that gets him a much easier opportunity to make plays.
I agree, but I wouldn't bring Gordon Hayward off the bench, at least not to begin the season. I'd have to see some pretty poor play from him to move him down there. I think what you can do is switch up rotations and stagger rotations enough where he and Kemba aren't always on the floor at the same time. So if you have the 2 of those guys on the floor separately, when Kemba's off the floor, Gordon Hayward is his offense. I'd like to see some of that. I'd like to see Gordon Hayward allowed to have the game in the palm of his hands, because we saw how good he can be when he has that type of responsibility in Utah. And I just want to see it again. The last one season. There are too many guys who have too much responsibility and take too much of a load in Kyrie Irving and Al Horford. Those 2 guys carried everything, and Marcus Smart with a lot of ball handling too. There's only Marcus Smart left. I think he's going to pull back and kind of shift his role a little bit. So there's a big spot for that secondary offense facilitator, and it's open for Gordon Hayward. It's just about doing it.
The good thing is right now, stylistically, they're not playing a whole lot of firm half-court offense where they're setting up their one guy and making play. I mean, they are getting out there. The pace and space that they talked about at media day and all that is the real deal. And you look up and down the assist totals. Brown at 3. Tice had 2 himself. Tatum gets 1. Hayward gets 3. Walker didn't even have to dish an assist in this one because everybody had the ball in their hands. Kanter's able to create a little bit off the bench. He's able to run a little bit too. That's how this might get sorted out. Everybody's scoring. Everyone's throwing to each other. It's a tough way to play. It's going to be exerting on this team. They do have a lot of bodies that they could shift in and out to make this work, though. And it does look like it's going to be the style that suits them best offensively. And they drop, 111 in this one, I believe? At least 110. Yeah, 118. It worked.
Absolutely. I said it 2 years ago. When you have 4 guys who can get the rebound off the rim and start the offense themselves, it allows you to do so many different things and show so many different looks, especially in transition, when you don't have to stop everything and get it to your point guard to bring it up and set up a half-court offense.
And that was the curse of the Kyrie offense. It's so visibly
Absolutely.
Different already.
And Kyrie, when the Celtics were best with Kyrie, it's because they were playing in transition. When they really struggled is when they went into half court and let him do everything. That doesn't work, not in Brad Stevens' offense. We've seen it that it just doesn't work. Isaiah Thomas is a different scenario, but they did so much for him. It wasn't just stagnant, you know, dribble, 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 make a move, get to the rim. It was so much, you know, the pick and roll, the high screen and roll with Al Horford to get those, you know, threes on that right wing. With this team you have now, there's going to be more of that. They don't have the five who can initiate the offense like we had with Horford, but it's fine. Those four guys are so good and such gifted ball handlers and scorers, and they can do so many different things. The fact that they can all start the offense from a different place at a different speed, you get to show a bunch of different looks, and it should turn into buckets for them.
And things just don't become as methodical in this situation. You don't have guys like wondering who's going to be the one to finish these possessions, the strings of passes that they're throwing out there. Because again, today, 2-9 from Tatum, Hayward didn't have the best shooting night either. You were relying on a lot of different guys to finish those shots last night and or last season. And some of them would be on some nights, some of them wouldn't be. And it just kind of evened out to like a very mediocre result every single game. The offense wasn't that good last year. For all the talent they had, for Horford being that middleman facilitator, they just couldn't free themselves. And it feels like them running, them pushing this, and taking advantage of turnovers, especially here, is what turned this up to a 50-point victory. The Cavs had like 15 turnovers in the first 12 minutes, and the Celtics jumped all over it. Like, they looked like sharks in the water with blood while they were out there, and the ball was bouncing around out of bounds and off guys' legs and everything else. Like, they just fed. Every single guy felt energized. Everybody felt involved, which is not what we saw last year.
No. They're a fast, athletic team, and they're playing like it. And it's exciting.
And it's how Stevens wants to play, too. So him as the coach in particular is going to be a much more happier result for everybody involved. And now you don't have guys worrying about their shots. I mean, Kemba's been out here just chilling for the most part. And he's cool with it. Like, there's been no complaints whatsoever. He's going to ease into this. He takes shots tonight. He's not the main facilitator. The other guys are dishing out the assists. And he's fine with it, which is a huge difference. Is he going to turn it up at some point, though, where he's shots on a given night? He's taking over. Is that going to come, or is this going to be how they approach this all year, you think?
It depends, because he's not the young point guard getting the max contract. He's a little bit older. He's definitely a vet. This is a move to go win. This isn't a move to get his stats in a new city. This is a move to win. It depends on how everyone else is playing. If Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum are all scoring at will from the wing, Kemba's going to feed that. If those guys are struggling, then Kemba can go get his 30. He's a good enough and smart enough point guard that I'm confident he can play the type of game he needs to night in and night out. Whereas, while Kyrie can play that, he's always going to try to score first. He's always going to try to get his, and it's just going to be that way. Right now, Kemba Walker, I assume he's going to, in the beginning, will be taking more shots than anyone else, but that can change as the season goes along. Last year, it couldn't.
Celtics play next on Tuesday. The preseason will be wrapping up at that point. They basically look like they're ready in terms of rotations and everything else to see how this is going to sort itself out. That 15th roster spot has to get decided. Max Strus came out and showed why he got signed to that spot tonight. So here's the one-minute explanation of how this is going to work. He got a partially guaranteed contract, so he owns the 15th spot right now. If they flip and decide they want Javonte Green, who's been perfect from the field this preseason, and a sensational dunker, great behind the back block that led to another dunk when he got into the game tonight. But Strus went out there and hit three threes after he had another one earlier in the game and ended up being one of the forefront scorers in this game because of that. Keith Smith over at Celtics Blog keeps singing this guy's praises as a bigger, I think he's 6'7", stretching forward, could definitely play some four if they needed it, which is a position that they're weak at. He makes a lot of sense at the 15th spot. I didn't see much from him in this preseason. He was 0-3 before tonight. And now that he got some steady run in this one with the blowout going on, I think we saw why he's probably the favorite to win that 15th spot.
I agree. It's been a while since the Celtics had one of those bench guys that just shoots threes. And in this league, it's proven that it's real important to have one, you know, at least one player who can do that. So I really like the way he was moving around, and I like how quick his release is and all of that. It's a 15th spot. If you can get a couple threes out of that from you know, strews throughout the season, I'll take it.
We obsess over the 15th spot every year at this time, October into November. Who's going to get it? Who's going to edge it out here? Green will be a tough guy to lose because he looks like he can play. And it doesn't seem like he's going to go play for $35,000 in the G League this year. They'll be somewhere else, though. At least give him a two-way. So they're probably going to lose him out of this. I'm just not freaking out about that portion of the roster. Strus is different because he seems to fit the style of the team where he could fit into certain situations and matchups that Stevens thinks stick out. I'm not freaking out about the Taco Fall thing, though. So he is probably going to drive Green out of town. If you love Green as a player and you think he's going to become something or even play a minute for this team, maybe you have a case here to be upset over them solidifying Taco right now. But it's not that important. I mean, how many 15th guys, how many two-way guys? I mean, we had that one Jabari Bird game a year or two ago where we said, oh, shoot, wish we could have him for the playoffs. But ultimately, none of this stuff really matters all that much besides end-of-the-year games and these games.
I agree. As you said, it's the 15th spot. There's a logjam at forward as it is. Adding another athletic forward who's a good defender in Javonte Green, I don't know what that does. He doesn't have a specialty skill like Strus does. You need that three-point shooter in this league. Brad knows how to scheme that open. I think it's a no-brainer to give it to Strus.
Yeah, I think it's a no-brainer there. It's just, would you have kept Fall at the second two-way spot or squeeze Green into there? Because they could squeeze Green into there.
He's 7'5". I think it's worth taking a flyer. I don't see the harm or issue in taking a flyer on a 7'5" guy who, for being as tall as he is, seems to be pretty, you know, solid and strong. And he clearly moves well enough on the basketball floor. It's not the prettiest thing in the world, but he's a basketball player. He's a 7'5" basketball player who's proven that he can do a couple things. I don't see the harm in taking a flyer there.
He's in control. Now, he's not playing the best guys in the world. In fact, he's playing the guys who are not only on the fringe of the NBA, but probably don't have a shot to make the NBA. Like, that guy who is just flailing his arm up in the air as Taco was slamming it down in his face. That guy might be in the G League next year, might be in Turkey. I'm going to keep an eye on that guy. But you got to just see what you have here. At the very least, I don't get the apprehension to where people think this guy is, and Lord bless him out there. And where is he right now? I think he might be in Greece, Pascal Chukwu. Pascal Chukwu did not have a great grip on the game of basketball. He could block shots. He made use of his 7'3 frame. He was a great player out here in Syracuse. He just didn't have a feel for the game of basketball, and you could see it with the way he was just fumbling around the ball when we watched him out here in his years here at Syracuse. Taco, there's none of that. I mean, he catches the ball every time they throw it to him. He secures his position down low, and whenever he gets it point blank at the basket, he's just throwing it down in someone's face. He's 310 pounds, so he's not a stick. He can move. I don't see the downside. He's never going to be the greatest rebounder in the world. It doesn't look like it. But, like, there's just no sharp enough downturns. He's smart. He's coachable. He doesn't get caught up in all this mania that's going on around him. I don't see any tangible downsides unless Javonte Green goes out and becomes, like, Paul George or something at his next destination.
Yeah, that's really it. It's between these two guys. And I'm taking the guy that you can put in the middle of the floor and he's bigger than everybody and can also play. That makes sense.
You miss a lot in the first round, especially in that middle range. You'll miss guys in the second round. Very rarely do you screw up undrafted guys where you get them on their roster and they go on to become stars. I don't think I've ever seen it. So if Green does that, great. If, you know, they have Strus now. They figured that out. They're keeping Waters, which they needed to do. Green's been great. I wish him well where he is next, because here's the thing, and this is the angle that hasn't been talked about with this. The Celtics own the main Red Claws now. Taco Fall is going to bring droves of people from that region and even Boston to go see him up there. They're going to be selling tickets. They're going to be selling merchandise. He is going to make main Red Claws basketball a team that is worth watching in your spare time. And that matters. because in the long term, the Celtics want to make that a developmental powerhouse. They want to make it one of the marquee franchises in the G League because they have tried to develop guys there before. Avery Bradley, Terry Rozier, lots of guys have spent, they care about that organization, and Taco Fall might be able to drive their income through the roof.
Right. And to reiterate, he's not a bad basketball player. He's a different basketball player because we haven't, every time a guy comes, like, you know, like this comes through the system, it's the same debate. It works out sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. There's no harm in taking this flyer.
It's been crazy, and hopefully it's done. When they send him to Maine, when they finalize this roster, he's not going to be on the sidelines anymore. Fans aren't going to be able to chant for Stevens to put him in, even if they do. He's not there.
Yeah.
So this is the way to do it. Don't give him the 15th spot. Don't have him on the bench every single game. Send him to Maine, get him the development he needs there. He's probably going to benefit from that more than a guy who was ready to go in the NBA right away. Like, I don't know, Fab Melo, who just wasted away up there. It was the right way to handle it. And I think they made a sensational move by taking a flyer on him because he can clearly keep up with the pace of the game, at least relative to the players that he's out there with.
Yeah, I don't think there's much else to say. It's a fine move.
I love that he makes the preseason interesting, too. Now, here's the thing. We got a caller last week who said, play Taco a ton. You're going to have people who are taking it way too far and think this guy can benefit the team this year. That's frustrating for people to deal with. I get it. But at least respect what he's doing to make the league. And he seems just like a great guy, as Stevens has said again and again. It's an awesome story. As crazy and as out of proportion as people have taken it, on the face, from a very, you know, reasonable standpoint, it's an amazing story.
Yeah. I, altogether, as I've said, it's been my opinion since the beginning. I don't see any harm or foul in taking a flyer on Taco Fall.
All right, final thoughts. Celtics defeat the Cleveland Cavaliers 118-72. If you want to get in something here on Taco, if you want to throw in a call on any of the preseason games, what's to come once the regular season gets going, let's hear it. 347-215-7771. In the meantime, we'll jump into our final thoughts. You got anyone to wrap it up today?
I'm going to continue to watch Jason Tatum, even in the beginning of the season, obviously. What I've been seeing from him, especially the first two games, is a completely different player offensively than we've seen from him. There have been flashes of, especially in playoffs games, his first two seasons, where he'll put his head down, get to the rim a bunch of times, you know, shoot his free throws, shoot his threes. He said it a couple weeks ago that he was going to concentrate on threes and layups. You know, I wanted to see it first. For three games, that's what we're seeing from this guy, and I'm excited, Bob. I think he's a bucket getter, and I think he can be the best player on this team by the end of the season.
What I love today, first guy out on the wing, Gordon Hayward. That had been Jaylen Brown in the past. Brown, they let him rotate a little bit deeper into this game. Ojale took him out in short order after that. But I love that he wasn't the last guy or the first guy thrown onto the bench from the rotation today because he's been so sensational. I'm starting to see him go to the left side, even though he's finishing with his left. He's been attacking the basket. And he's continuing to hit threes. He's been aggressive. Had a great play where he blasted through a ball handler. Almost got the steal. I think it was Osman again. Man, Osman got abused in this one. And Colin Sexton, one of the worst starts to a half that I have seen in any basketball. He had 6 turnovers in short order by the 11-minute mark of the second quarter. Dribbling off his leg, traveling. He just could not control himself. Wow. I know they were missing some guys, but that Cavaliers team was bad. But back to my point, Brown looks sensational. He destroyed the Magic the other night, looked great again here. And if they can make him part of the core rotation, playing the same amount of minutes as Kemba, Tatum, I think they're going to benefit a lot more because you've harped on this again and again in the show. He's been underplayed in his years in Boston so far.
I agree. Jaylen Brown is my favorite Celtic, has been since he was drafted, except for the 2 Kyrie years, so... He's back to being my favorite Celtic. He's clearly played. Oh, my apologies. He's clearly played very well, and he and Tatum are developing chemistry on offense and defense. That's very exciting because those two are supposed to be the guys that are at the core of this. And to see them really working together on both ends, is nice, but I'll let you get to what you need to do.
All right, football season's in full swing. We had the little mini computer screen out there watching the Celtics while everybody in the room was trying to watch some NFL Sunday Ticket. But we're loving it. Preseason basketball, there's so many stories on the Celtics. And it's also an opportunity to bet. And preseason basketball is one of the more interesting games to bet. I saw an unbelievable line when the Rockets played China or some team from China before all that controversy hit. 32-point favorites. That's all they were against this team from China, the Houston Rockets. James Harden played. They ended up winning by 40, 50 points. So that could be you. I mean, there's a lot of interesting spreads in the preseason basketball, or you could just stick to your football because it is football scene. So get in on the game with exclusive sports betting partner of CLNS Media, betonline.ag. Sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus. If you really see a preseason game that you think is a lock, there are some out there. Your welcome bonus will go to your first deposit, and you can start betting on whatever you want. Spreads, totals, winners, losers, all that stuff. Head over to the betonline.ag today and use your mobile device to join. Use the promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome back bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sports book experts. They've been a longtime partner of CLNS Media. Keep up with the Garden Report. They're going to have some more videos from TD Garden tonight over on the YouTube screen. We have ACC NCAA basketball coverage starting out here in Syracuse. We did our first few videos from the Syracuse scrimmage, so check out that on the YouTube channel. And, of course, we'll be back Tuesday night as the Celtics wrap up the preseason. For Taylor McLeod, Nick Joso, all of CLNS Media, I'm Bobby Manning, and we will see you Tuesday night. Celtics win by a score of 118-72. Good night.